We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is Mike Gorman, and you're listening to Green with Envy with Will, Adam, and Greg.
All right, everybody, we got a special edition here of Green with Envy. If you're looking at the screen, you already know what it is. Drew Carter is back in the building. It is Green with Envy. You guys know the deal. Let's lock in. What up? Welcome into another edition of Green with Envy. As always, this is your boy Will. We are checking in. How you doing? How you living? Riding solo today from the GWE side of things, but as you can see on the screen, and as you may have heard, it is a special edition of Green with Envy. Welcoming back to the podcast today, the current and future voice, kind of in that in-between state, current and future voice of the Boston Celtics, Drew Carter is here today. Drew, thanks for being here, man.
Well, what's up, bro? It's great to see you again. Thanks for having me. I just want to know what I did wrong, because the first time I came on the show, it was you and Greg. Adam didn't show up. Now it's just you. So, like, did I say something to piss off Greg? Did I tweet something that angered Adam? Where is everybody?
I mean, honestly, by this next time, you might just be on the show by yourself.
I know.
We're just gonna give you, 20 minutes. Say Adam. Yep. Say Drew. We need you to just roll through this here. So yeah, some scheduling conflicts didn't work out, but I promise you, we're gonna have the whole crew here eventually for all of us to get into everything. But right now, I want to start with this, man. I said at the top, right? Like, this is your freshman year, let's call it, as a Celtics announcer, just officially has been wrapped, has been concluded. How are you feeling, man? This is covering one of the premier franchises, maybe the premier franchise in the NBA, number one seed, what historic season. I know. Hey, listen, listen, yeah. I know you have other jobs and responsibilities as well too. So I want to make sure that I'm trying to cover all of our bases here, but tell me, man, let's just start from the top. How are you feeling?
Well, it's funny. Let's actually start there with the fact that, you know, I work with and in way for the Celtics, and they're my favorite team. And when we're just talking, we're chopping it up off camera, I'll say we to refer to the team. I don't do that on the broadcast. Scal does. but I like to maintain a measure of objectivity. But in the same way, right, you know, we all know it's the local New England broadcast, like the logos all over the channel. People want to hear announcers who obviously love the team. And it's been fun for me to, you know, as the season progresses, fall in love with the team organically. You know, I hope people realize that I don't just love the team because I have the job. Like, I actually really enjoy watching Celtics basketball, pulling for the team. And a big reason why is because you get to know the people and the players and the coaches and the front office and the owners. And at a certain point, you just realize, like, damn, I'm invested in this. Like, right, it's not just that I want to be on a duck boat sitting next to Mike Gorman and maybe hopefully get a ring one day. Like, I actually just want them to win because I really like these people, and you see the work they put in, and you hope it pays off. With that being said, though, I actually did this ESPN Hoop Streams broadcast, which is a digital show. It's on social media. And I was wearing like a green quarter zip. So it was, I would say it was objective enough. It was impartial enough. But like, if you know, you know, like, I'm wearing green because I love the Celtics and work for them. So I show up and I'm doing the show with Christine Williamson and Gary Streisky, two people you probably
seen. I saw a clip of this, and Gary's got some Boston ties as well. I believe he was with Nessun for a little bit as well.
Yeah. So he was
Red Sox. He also had a full on Celtics jersey.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. So I show up and I'm like, I thought I was going to be the biggest Celtics homer on this broadcast. And here's Gary in a Larry Bird jersey. And I'm like, what is that, dude? I thought you liked the Nuggets. He's like, I play to my strengths. I like the Nuggets and the Celtics. What's going to happen if they're in the finals? He's like, we'll figure it out when we get there. But he said
he's
going
to do one of those, like those mom jerseys, yeah, where you're going to split it down the middle. It's Jokic on one side, Tatum on the other side.
Like Mama Kelsey in the Super Bowl. The first one I remember, I think it was Brady Quinn and maybe like Clay Matthews. I feel like back then there was a sister-in-law situation, but anyway, I digress. I show up and I'm like, really, bro, you're in a Larry Bird jersey? Like, I could have gone all out for this. But then all the Heat fans, first of all, probably weren't watching. They were probably out on the beach or, you know, doing something more Miami. But if they were watching, then they would have been upset. So we had to maintain a little bit of impartiality.
Right. That was your home court. You could have fully embraced taking advantage of it. And you mentioned getting to know the people, and the people of the city of Boston, the fans of the Boston Celtics. I saw recently there was a New York Post article where you talked about starting to get noticed a little bit more around the city. And you know, obviously, you know, the city of Boston, very well known for being very involved in the lives of any of the athletes or anyone that covers the team. Like, you're going to hear about it. So I know you've had some interactions while trying to get sandwiches, but I'm curious, is there any particular fan interaction that you've had as you started to get noticed more often that sticks out to you?
Yeah. So first of all, thanks for referencing that. If you haven't seen it, New York Post, my man Scargs, Chris Scarglotto, he did a fantastic job with that story. So go check that out. The thing that Will is referencing is I was in line at Monica's in the North End, which, you know, if you're from Boston or ever spent some time in the city, you know that
a lot of people will know what you're referencing. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was at Monica's. It was actually my first time going there, and I was with a friend, and we're in line outside, and, you know, a fan came up to us, and I think her name was Megan. Pretty sure. Sorry, Megan, if you're listening. And that's
shout out to potentially Megan.
I think it's Megan, but she walked by and she was like, oh my God, are you the new Celtics announcer? And I was like, hell yeah, what's up? And so we talked for a while, and she told me she sat in the 300 level. I'm like, you know, I hear that's where the real rowdy bunch is. So love that. Must be a blast up there. We talked for a little bit, and that was really, really neat. And it was, I've started to write things down this year. I'm not really a big diary guy. At least I haven't been, but this year has been such a whirlwind in the most amazing ways that I've started to write stuff down just so I don't forget it. And if I ever want to write a book one day, like if I make it to Gorman level with 40
years. I like the thinking ahead here. In case I want to have a memoir, let me make sure I have this down and correct.
Right. Because like, I'm sure, I don't know, I haven't talked to Mike about this, but I'm sure part of him, like if he hasn't written everything down, I bet part of him regrets that, but he does have an amazing memory, so maybe he just has it all up here anyway. But most of what I write down in there is quotes from Scal and cool moments with people, like, you know, in the streets or whatever, or like going out to dinner with Kevin Harlan, stuff like that.
Right. That's awesome.
I would say the maybe my favorite moment though, and I can't remember if I shared this last time, so I apologize if I did, but we can swear on this, right?
Yeah, of course, let it fly.
Okay. So I was in the garden, and I was walking from the court up to the concourse on the first level, and I'm going up the stairs, and some dude who was sitting on the aisle seat, he stops me and he's like, dude, you're doing a great fucking job, kid. You're the balls, dude. It felt like a very welcome to Boston moment. So that was really neat.
Yeah, there's like a 90% chance that was my cousin Ryan. That sounds pretty much like how he would say something to me. But
hey, Will, I gotta get something off my chest because that just reminded me of it. This might be a controversial opinion. I think the Sam Adams, your cousin from Boston commercials are not funny at all and low hanging fruit and honestly offensive. And I didn't even grow up in Boston. But like, holy smokes. You talk about a caricature that's not even well done at all. I know D. White was in the commercial, and D. White's the man. I love Derek. And that was the only one I actually enjoyed. The rest of them, I'm like, really? Like, have you guys tried at all? Or did you just like see one TikTok or heard one impression and say, yep, there's our latest ad campaign? It's terrible.
I mean, here's the thing. As someone who grew up in Boston and then moved away, my guess is that the person behind the marketing of your cousin from Boston is probably not from Boston.
That's what I thought.
And because that's, you know, that's why I always say, like, when I first time people will meet me when I'm, you know, whether I'm here in Texas or wherever else outside, you know, outside of Boston or Massachusetts, you know, the park the car and have it. Yeah. Like, that's like the first thing people get. And if I don't have an accent, which admittedly my accent has, you know, deteriorated a bit since I've been away, you get me back in the middle of Boston, it picks up a little bit. You give me a few beers, it's going to pick up a little bit, but yeah. I don't necessarily always have that as strong of an accent anymore. And so, you know, when someone meets me, they're like, "Oh, you're from Boston." They start doing that, like, "Oh, you like Boston?" I'm like, "All right, not everyone's the same in Boston. Like, there's many different sides to it." So, the first time I saw that ad campaign, I think I had the same reaction. I think I've become kind of just, you know, it's whatever at this point. And then, like you said, the Derek White one, I did enjoy. I think there's parts of it that were funny, but definitely the first time I saw that ad campaign, I had the same thought you did, is like, it's just low hanging fruit, but you know, it's marketing. You're trying to appeal to not just people from Boston, and this is what people not from Boston envision everybody in Boston like, and there's little bits of truth, but definitely the low hanging fruit.
For the record, you can do this well. Like, there have been plenty of commercials where they've gone for the low hanging fruit and nailed it. Like, do you remember the Hyundai commercial? I think it was a Super Bowl commercial. With John Krasinski, Rachel Dratch, Chris Evans, Big Poppy shows up for Smat Pack. Like, is that low hanging fruit? Yeah, but it was hilarious. And great marketing. Their SNL sketches with Casey Affleck and Bill Burr, mm-hmm. where they're good.
The Casey Affleck Dunkin' Donuts sketch, I think I watch that once every 2 to 3 months.
It's amazing.
It's one of my favorite sketches of all time. It's
Vanilla Nut Taps. Well done. I reference that all the time. So, like, you can do this well. I just don't
understand. He shows the camera his phone, and it's all beaten up and scratched. That's one of my favorite things, because when I go back home to Boston, I have a bunch of friends that work in construction or laborers and stuff like that. Their phones are always cracked. That's 100% how every single one of their phones is at different points. And they're like, "Nah, I can't get a new one. It's just going to break anyways."
So stuff like that, Will, shows you that the people writing this at least have a sense of what it's like in Boston. So the whole point is you can do it well. And I just think, a company like Sam Adams, I mean, come on. To me, you're ostracizing your core fan base, which is Boston people, who will see right through that and be like, "Damn, this is not accurate." So that bothers me.
Sam Adams, if you guys are listening, we've got a consultant ready for you here in your own backyard. So please make sure you hit up Drew Carter's line so that we can get you guys connected. But Drew, something I wanted to bring up with you here, and it's kind of built on the last time that you were here. And I think it was either right after the preseason or maybe after one of the first two games, just very early on in the season, when you were with us last time. And one of the things that we touched on was finding ways to make connections, not just with the NBC staff, but with the coaching staff, with the players, and how it's going to take time to develop. And I think at one point you talked about, you know, on the bus, you got to kind of find your place as to where you're sitting, who you're talking to. So I'd love for you to take us through, because I think this is something that's very relatable for anybody that's either had a new job, first day of school, trying to make connections, trying to find common ground. Maybe tell us a little bit about how you went about making connections with, and this could be anyone on the staff, could be players, and maybe one interaction you had that went well when trying to make a connection. And if you have any that maybe didn't go quite as planned, would also love to hear that from you as well.
So, you know, I think there are a lot of cliches that could go into this, like being seen, not heard, not forcing anything, letting it happen organically, right? That's always my favorite word. It's gonna happen organically, you know, aka just don't be an idiot. But I actually, and again, I apologize if I shared this last time, but I had an experience when I was in college that was really shitty, frankly, in the moment, but taught me a good lesson. So I worked for a minor league baseball team in Auburn, New York, which is just outside Syracuse, like 40 minutes outside. And the whole year I was like, I really want to be tight with the manager, because I was doing 78 games solo on the radio. And we're talking about the lowest level of minor league ball. It's not affiliated anymore. It was short season single A with the Auburn Double Days. So there's not much meat on the bone, you know, like you really want to be able to tell stories and learn some stuff about the characters involved. And so I wanted to be close with the manager. And I think I forced it a little bit, where I I thought of myself as part of the team, when in reality, like, if you're an announcer and you're around athletes, they're always going to view you as not part of the team, I think. And there are levels to it, right? But even if you're traveling with them, even if, you know, you're allowed in the locker room, whatever, like, I'd go in the clubhouse and I'd ask those guys, like, how to pronounce their name and, like, what do you want for your walk-up song? And then sometimes we'd go out together after the game. But even still, it's like there's a little bit of separation there. And so anyway, I really wanted to feel like part of the team. Manager was kind of a, you know, tough exterior guy. And toward the end of the season, we were out drinking in State College, where nothing good ever happens after like 9 p.m. And I confront him. I'm like, hey, man, did I do something? Like, why don't you like me? And honestly, Will, that's the last thing I remember. I blacked out and I woke up the next day, and the guy who I roomed with on the road, his name was Dean. He was the video intern for the Nationals, our parent franchise. And I woke up, I'm like, oh my God, dude. Number one, my head's killing me. Number two, I had this crazy dream that I got in a fight with our manager and left my phone at the bar. And he's like, that happened, bro.
Oh my God.
So I was an idiot. I was 20.
Wait, hold on real quick. I gotta interrupt here. Please define. 21. You got into a fight with the manager, because that needs some clarification.
So again, Will, the detail's a little hazy, right?
Or from what people told you happened.
From what people told me. I basically, like I said, I kind of confronted him, and then I think it got I don't know how it escalated from, hey man, why don't you like me, to like, I gotta get out of here before I get my ass kicked. Somewhere along the line, you know, shit just went off the rails, and it was okay. Like, the next day I apologized. We were fine. You know, we're not best friends or anything. We never were, but, it was a really good lesson in not conflating, you know, a coach not viewing you as part of the team. Like, you're not equal with the players and the people on his staff, and not taking that as a personal slight, right? Like, I don't think, maybe the coach didn't like me. He probably didn't after that night in State College. He might not have, but even if he didn't, it's okay. Like, I don't have to be best friends with everyone on the team. And there's a way.
One thing I hope for you, Drew, is that you did not take this experience and try the same with the current head coach of the Boston Celtics. Because I don't know if you and I would be having this interview today.
I would be 6 feet under if I even looked at Joe Mazzulla in the wrong way. But here's the thing, and here's why I tell the story, to bring it full circle. It was a really good lesson, especially for this year, because if you've seen Joe Mazzulla do interviews, especially with me at times, you know, there are times where it seems like he's got a wall up. And I honestly, and people might not believe this, and you can think whatever you want to think. Like, I feel like Joe and I have a pretty good relationship. And what you see in the pregame interviews, a lot of the time, you know, we keep it pretty treetops level. I would really love to get into some stuff that he does, you know, away from the game, and like, hey man, we've been in, you know, Atlanta for 4 days. Like, what do you like to do in Atlanta? You know, and stuff like that. But at that point, it's an hour and a half before the game. So he doesn't want to focus on anything but the task at hand, which I understand, but that also kind of makes it tough. You know, we only have a minute 30 or 2 minutes. It can feel kind of generic, but that's also why it's fun, because it's a challenge and Joe doesn't make it easy. I mean, he's honest about how his favorite thing is making people uncomfortable. And I think he looks at that as a chance to make me uncomfortable.
Did you happen to see him on Part of My Take recently?
I did. Yeah.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So I don't really listen to that show too often, unless, of course, Derek White, Peyton Pritchard, and now Joe Mazzulla are on the show. Right. But I think you and I were starting to try to figure out a time to schedule this. And I actually thought of you during that interview for the exact reason that you're saying, where he talks about he has to win every environment or situation that he's in. And, you know, at one point they make a joke about, so how do you win Dunkin' Donuts? You know, it's, I know the eggs, and I kind of size up everybody in there to make sure, like, I know who I have to, like, take on or beat up or whatever, you know, like these type of thoughts. And so it made me think of, okay, because I had this on my list of things I wanted to bring up, is what is it like to interview Joe Mazzulla?
Yeah.
Because I can tell you do exactly what I would do in that same situation, is, you know, you have to kind of be really focused on it's so close to game time. But I notice at times you'll try to slide in at least a quick joke, or even be self-deprecating to try to bring that guard down just a little bit, right? To try to get Joe to open up. And Joe's thing, I think him winning, quote unquote, in that moment is not giving you that victory, right? Is him being guarded. So it was funny listening to that and then thinking of those pregame interviews that you do with him. And I'm like, okay, I can totally correlate this and see how it lines up for Joe.
Right. Yeah. And so here's where the lesson from when I was in college applied to what I'm doing now. So there was a moment earlier this year where I was really excited for the interview. I felt like I had some good questions lined up. I thought, like, hey, Joe wants to just talk about the game. I feel like I got some good stuff about, you know, matchups and keys. And I was really stoked for the interview. I walked away from it feeling like, damn, I can't get to this guy. Like, this is always going to be a waste of everyone's time. He doesn't want to open up. And so I was really frustrated. And I went to the media room and I sort of vented to Scal a little bit. And Scal, like, you know, Scal, he's also kind of like Joe in the sense that, you know, he's kind of twisted. He's kind of sick, where he loves where other people are uncomfortable or just generally unhappy. And so he's like, yeah, this is awesome, man. Like, finally, you know, you feel like you can't do something and like blah, 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 blah. And like, this is a good challenge for you. And I'm like, no, dude, this is frustrating because I feel like I did everything I could. And like, it takes two to tango. And I really respect and value Scal, because in that moment he was absolutely right. And now I view it kind of similar to the way he does, where I think it's a fun challenge. And I also don't take it as personally when Mazzulla like doesn't say anything. So, you know, for example, against Denver, I was like, hey, man, last time you guys matched up, you went with Horford to start on Jokic when Horford came in. Are you going to have a similar strategy tonight? And he was like, we'll see. And I was like, are you shitting me, man? Like, don't you want to talk about matchups in the games?
Yeah. But like, I'm trying to meet you on your level here.
Yeah,
I'm not making a weed reference here, trying to be funny here in Denver. Like, I'm asking you about a strategic matchup that we have right now.
And that's what I was thinking going into it, Will. But then you realize, like, even if you feel like you are, you know, preparing to the best of your ability, there's always more you can do. There's always a way to work harder. And so what I've really enjoyed this year is A, getting to know Joe, because we have spent some time together, like, away from the interview and, you know, away from the arena. And I really, really like the guy. I think he's unique. You know, like, you watched a Pardon My Take interview. There are not many guys like him in the world. And so I've really gotten to like him. And I think we are developing that relationship, but it has been, again, organic. Although the second to last game where I did that interview, so we were in New Orleans at the end of March, for whatever reason, Coach Mazzulla was in a great mood. And so we were talking a bunch before the interview, and then we talked for a while after the interview, and I thought the interview was good. And I walked out of the media room and I saw his wife and his son outside, and I was like, Joe's in a great mood today. That was awesome. He was talkative. Fantastic. So I feel like we ended on a good note, and truthfully, I'm excited to keep doing those interviews, because again, it's a good challenge. And you know, hopefully we reach a point where, you know, maybe he opens up a little bit. Maybe that's, you know, wishful thinking, but either way, I think it will be useful for the viewer.
Maybe you just got to meet him on his level and do some jujitsu with him.
Here's the great thing about Joe. Well, like if I told him, Hey, I really want to get into jujitsu, I actually think he would help me do it. Like he'd either, you know, put me through a session himself, or he would set me up with a trainer. I think people get the wrong idea about him where, you know, he hates the media or hates giving any access. I don't think that's true at all. Like we mentioned the interview where he was with Pardon My Take for a long time. He's done extended interviews. He did one with the Sports Hub on the show he goes on every week. He did this. I don't know if you saw the documentary type video that NBC Sports Boston put together about Joe, like going to his high school gym in Rhode Island. You got to check it out. It's cool. But I don't think he dislikes, I mean, maybe he dislikes it, but he's not like, you know, Belichick or Popovich. I think he's a little bit different, you know, in every sense.
Yeah. No, it's interesting because, you know, you weren't here last year during Missoula's first year, and it was a very strange year, right? Because he wasn't expecting to be in the position he was in. And I think, you know, at first everyone was like, oh my God, this is so strange. This guy's in this new position. We were all well aware of how weird this was. And then the worst thing that probably happened, and I've said this many times, the Celtics got off to like a 21-4 historic start. We're killing everybody. And everyone was like, oh yeah.
Once, from deep, right? Something crazy.
Exactly. Yeah. And so then it just felt like business as usual. This team should win the NBA title. And then he lost another assistant coach later in the year. And like, you forget that. I think it was really, you forget that Joe Mazzulla just thought, and he said this on the Part of My Pick interview, I thought I was going to be a second row guy just doing grunt work like forever. I mean, you know, Joe Mazzulla is my age, right? He's in his mid 30s. You know, like this isn't a guy who was exactly primed to be the immediate guy to take over the Boston Celtics at the time that it happened. And so, you know, I think his first interview this season when he did it with JJ Redick on The Old Man and the Three was the first time I think you had to really realize, like, man, it was such a shock for him to be in the position he was in. Took a while for him to get used to it. And now I think this year you're seeing him be more comfortable. I think last year I had a running joke. I thought he was a robot because he was just doing things that he thought that a coach should do or that a human should do. Occasionally he would try to make a joke and it was like, I think it's just the algorithm telling him to act more human. And then this year I do think he's been more human and he's been very transparent about how he's been able to be more authentically him. And I think that you see that, and it's great to hear kind of these connections from someone like yourself. Another guy that you mentioned in your story was Scal. And so I'm curious, what has it been like building chemistry with Scal? It sounds like, obviously, in a moment of frustration that you go to vent to Scal, that's a next level of the two of you beyond just a colleague-to-colleague relationship. So tell me a little bit about what that's been like building chemistry with Scal behind the desk live time and then also kind of, you know, off air.
So Scal, he describes our relationship as he's like my uncle. If he had a brother who's way older than he is and that brother had a kid, so then his nephew is like closer in him to age than it would regularly be. And that's kind of confusing. But basically, even though, I mean, I think it's just Scal's way of trying to make himself feel young. But even though like Scal is 20 years older than I am or whatever, I do feel like we have a relationship where, you know, to me, it's more like he's my big brother, you know, because he's been there and he's been through the NBA ringer. And I just look, I really like the guy. And I think from the moment we first worked together, which was the audition, I feel like he's been my biggest champion. And so I, first of all, have a lot of, you know, gratitude toward him. And I feel like I owe him in a way. But I also, even since he was playing, I've had a lot of admiration for him. You know, like when he said that thing after 08, you know, the famous press conference quote, and when he did the scallenge, and I just think that he's a different type of cat. Like you haven't seen many guys who are in his role, which again, he's honest about. Like he says, like, look, man, I rode the bench a lot. Like he doesn't have any illusions about what his career was. But to see him capitalize on what he did and what he accomplished, which, like, for the record, how many people who play basketball make the NBA? Like 0.00001%. So just to get there is amazing. And Is Scal tall? Yeah, but is he, you know, is he a freak athlete compared to the guys in the NBA? No. So to get there, he obviously had to work his ass off. And I think it's cool, Will, because he applies the same attention to detail and work ethic that got him to the NBA. He applies that to broadcasting. Like, he really has a mind for it, and I think a sense for it. He says things that, to me, I haven't heard many former players and coaches say. I think a lot of them think, hey, look, I got the credentials. I know the game. I know the people involved. I can just step in and do the job. Whereas Scal actually looks at it sort of from a producer's lens. And we have an amazing producer, Paul Lucy. And I think that's part of the reason why Scal does this, is it's a collaborative thing. And then when we're just chilling and talking about, you know, how the show went or what kind of content we should put in the next day, I really think he thinks about it on a kind of deep level. So I just have a lot of respect for that, because, again, if you play in the NBA, you don't have to put that work in, but he does. I think he really cares about it being a good product. Even the shit he said about Caleb Martin and Jason Tatum and the Code Red, whatever.
Code Red, yeah.
Part of the reason he did that is so he could just stir the pot. I mean, the game sucked. The series will probably suck. So, like, there's got to be something to talk about. And bada bing, bada boom, we've had 3 days of content out of a horrible game one. There you go. And Scal says, you're welcome. And I actually listened to
it. I mean, that's fair. We have a breakout video on our YouTube page talking about exactly that. Series outlook, bringing up the Code Red. So yeah, if you guys are looking for that, please scroll down on the YouTube page to check that out. But yeah, Scal being a pot stir, definitely, I mean, let's just say that comes through on the broadcast. I think that is definitely something that you can take away. But I think the chemistry that the two of you are building as we look ahead to the future of not just road games, but all road and home games, I do think that's something for Celtics fans to look forward to. But you brought up the Celtics playoffs here, so let's transition to that a little bit. And, you know, we're recording this in the middle of the Celtics-Miami series, so we're not really going to focus on any particular game, but I more want to look at this from a high-level view of, you know, Drew, obviously you've been around this team all year. You know, the way that the playoffs, the path for the Celtics, it's hard to imagine it could have broken much better, especially with all the ambiguity that there was towards the end of the season, other than the Celtics seed, because they had been locked up for basically 3 weeks. But getting the Miami Heat in the first round, who, even if they were healthy, I think it had gotten to a point where a lot of Celtics fans were like, just bring it. Let's just get this over. Yeah. Let's rip the Band-Aid off, right? Yeah. So now you get no Jimmy Butler. Terry Rozier likely not playing, at least for a couple more games as well, too. So there's just a huge talent deficit. So while we don't want to assume what's going to happen, whether it's 4 or 5 or 6 games, it feels pretty confident the Celtics are going to be, you know, move on at some point here. And so you look ahead, and then they're going to get the winner of the vicious rock fight that is the Cleveland Cavaliers and Orlando Magic. Will Orlando get to 100 points in this series? To be determined. We haven't seen that happen. We'll get to 90. They haven't got to 90.
Yeah, Cleveland hasn't even scored 100, and they've won both by double figures, I think.
So it's the definition of a rock fight. So look at the winner of that, and then you look at the other side of this bracket here, and, you know, New York and Philly playing some epic games. Embiid, clearly all types of banged up, but hanging in. Giannis not out. That series is potential to go long. And so from your view, you know, could this path have been any better for the Celtics than it is right now?
I mean, think about it. Well, the guys who are injured and are either not playing or less than 100% clearly, Jimmy Butler, Giannis, Embiid, I think, and Julius Randle
in the,
So here's the thing. Like, you got the best player from maybe the three scariest teams all compromised. And then the other team in that mix, I would say, is New York, and their second best player is compromised. And I just think that they're, you know, if that is the Eastern Conference Finals matchup, I think they're a little bit limited in terms of scoring, and obviously very reliant on Brunson. Now, with that being said, I mean, the first two games, he has not played that well, and they've still won. So maybe that's not right. But I just think, you know, not to get way out ahead of ourselves, but if we do match up with the Knicks, I do feel like our length on the perimeter is going to really bother him. And without like a real bona fide second option, I think they'll struggle to score. But in terms of like big picture, man, it did work out really well. The only thing I worry about is second round potential, Dean Wade doing Dean Wade things again. That's the only PTSD I would have. But I also feel like, you know, Cleveland, even if they do win this series, which it looks like they're going to, I thought Orlando would beat them, just out tough them.
I did too. I was wrong on that. Yeah.
Last year,
they're going to be wrong on that.
Yeah, they're so young, though. They're so young. So Orlando will be fine. I just think Cleveland has enough experience. Even still, it just feels like it doesn't feel like the sum of the parts matches up with the whole. Like I actually think that the sum of the parts is greater than the finished product in Cleveland. Like they got so much talent, size. They should be like Minnesota, right? Like they got a badass guard who like puts the team on his back. They got some extra ball handling. They got huge size, but for whatever reason, it feels like the Wolves have clicked and the Cavs haven't, aside from that one stretch when Garland and Mobley were out. So all that to say, I don't really worry about them. I think the toughest matchup would be a potential meeting with either the Knicks or the Bucks in the Eastern Conference Finals. But, you know, we're recording this the day after the Bucks lost game two, and man, did they look bad in that one in the second half. Yeah. They looked amazing in game one. And I was like, damn, maybe we all slept on them too much. And then they come out the next game and don't play any defense and turn it over in the backcourt and just get blitzed by Indy. And who knows when Giannis...
Until Giannis comes back, they have zero response to Pascal Siakam. He's right. even in game one in that loss, you saw that, you know, he's gonna be a big time problem if Giannis doesn't come back.
Yeah, and they said something on Inside the NBA that I thought was interesting. Like Pascal Siakam is the most experienced playoff performer on the Pacers. It's like, damn, really? And then you realize like if they hadn't made that trade, they'd have nobody. They'd be like the Magic.
Aaron Nesmith. Aaron Nesmith is probably the guy with the most. He got some garbage time in the finals run.
Exactly. And Nesmith, man, I mean, shoot. He's the reason I don't want to see the Pacers in a potential Eastern Conference Finals, because he'll probably injure like six of our players. You thought the Caleb Martin thing was bad. Woo! Aaron Nesmith, he plays hard. He toes that line for sure.
It's funny, man. That's the exact sentiment we've had on this show. Is I'm not necessarily scared of playing the Pacers. I'm scared of Aaron Nesmith because he clearly plays the Celtics with a chip on his shoulder, as we've seen in the four or five games they played this year. And he plays like a Tasmanian devil, which we knew from his time here. But when you add the added incentive of, you know, his you know, the chip on his shoulder for playing the Celtics, for trading him, it's a little bit scarier when you have big dreams like the Celtics do, and he's running around there doing the things that he does. But it is what makes him so unique. So I want to refocus this, because like we said, we've talked about the East a bunch, in where there's just every team is just kind of missing something.
I know.
Except for the Celtics.
Even Indy, I don't think Halliburton's been the same since he did the splits.
Oh, he definitely hasn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, in that game last night, you know, can you imagine what this team would have looked like if you have the in-season tournament version of Halliburton compared with Pascal Siakam? Now that's getting closer to a real, I think they still need a few more pieces to be in the Boston, if New York's fully healthy, discussion, but they're a whole hell of a lot closer. But internally with the Celtics team, as you've watched them all year, we know obviously this is a team that has so many different players that can do so many different things. Who do you look to as kind of the key to all of that? Is it going to start with the Jays and starts and ends with the Jays? Or is it maybe one of those glue guys like Drew Holiday or Derek White that really makes things go? Who is the guys that you're looking to as someone who's intimately watched this team throughout the year, that this is going to be the guy that if he's on, good luck to everybody else?
It's KP. You know, I think Porzingis is the difference between this year's team and the past few years, where, you know, the Celtics still shoot more threes than anyone else in the NBA. They were pretty close to breaking a record for most made threes this season. And I know that really bothers some people, but three is more than two. And we do have really good three-point shooters on this team. With that being said, this is the first time to me where the Celtics have a real plan B. And that's, it starts with Porzingis, but it also is the Jays being more aggressive in the post, having a guy in Drew Holiday who is a guard but also has a decent post-up game and can obviously facilitate from the block. It's not just if our threes aren't falling or screwed. I actually think the Celtics, this version of the Celtics, if you put them in the Eastern Conference Finals against Miami last year, could win that series. Even if Miami shot 43% from deep, and the Celtics shot 30% from deep, like what happened in that 7-game series, which people like to conveniently leave out when they talk about how great Jimmy Butler was and blah, 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 and how the Jays choked, blah, blah, blah. Well, they couldn't miss. We couldn't make one. And our best player rolled his ankle 50 seconds into game seven. So that's what happened. But even if the threes aren't going, the Celtics have another option, and it starts with KP, who has really been, you know, at different times this year, the most efficient post-up scorer in the NBA.
Right.
It's that. It's the spacing he provides, because if you look at the numbers, his average three-point distance is, in terms of how far it is top five in the NBA. You got like Dame, Trey, Porzingis.
All the small guards. Yeah. I think Halliburton's in there as well, too.
Yeah.
It's all these guards that handle the ball, yeah.
And they chuck from way outside, and Porzingis does the same. So think about your options if they run a pick and roll with Porzingis. It's either switch and you have a small guy on him and he has cooked those dudes all season. You play drop and you let him pick and pop or let the other guy shoot, and Porzingis can shoot from 27, 28 feet and everyone else on the floor can shoot. I just think he's kind of the cheat code for this team, and he's unlocked so much. And then the other like low key X factor is I'm just excited to watch Peyton Pritchard get legit run in the playoffs. And it's an amazing story. What happened last year to this year, like requesting a trade, and all of a sudden, you know, obviously I'm biased and we watch him every day, but I think he could have a case for most improved player. I mean, he doesn't put up big enough numbers to win that, but I just think he's so much better than he was last season, and he works his tail off. It's been fun to see. So I can't wait to watch him get consistent burn in the postseason.
What's up, Celtics fans? You know, the other day I was talking to two girls, yeah, that's right, two, who were telling me how into foreplay they are and how they wished they had more single guys to do it with. No, not that foreplay. We're not looking to get you teed up on the pod. I'm talking F-O-U-R-P-L-A-Y, foreplay. It's an app where single friends team up and double date other single friends. It's a more fun, lower pressure, and safer way to meet new people, which is exactly why those single girls love it. In fact, they love it so much that they make up the majority of the teams on the app, as in a 3-to-1 ratio in your favor, gentlemen. Look, we all know everything is better with a wingman. Just ask Jason and Jaylen. And with foreplay, you don't have to sacrifice bromance for romance, because it's a chance to enjoy a night out with a buddy while meeting two new people in a more social environment without the expectations. And the icing on the cake, it's totally free. All right, it's game time. So head over to the App Store now and download foreplay, F-O-U-R-P-L-A-Y, and get ready for a little two-on-two.
Yeah, I think it's going to be the recognition that's going to come along with it. And this is something we've already started to talk about towards the end of the season, is I think I forget what the deal is that he got locked. I think it was 4 years, $30 million, something to that effect, the beginning of the year. And as the books are going to get really, really tight for this team, that's going to be one of those contracts where, you know, I don't want to say it's going to be, you know, how Alex Caruso was in a bunch of trade rumors. He makes like $9 million and the Bulls were like, we want 2 first-round picks for him. I don't know if Peyton Pritchard is going to reach quite to that level, but I think it's going to be that type of asset somewhere, you know, within that spectrum that even, you know, as the Celtics are going to need to make moves or figure out what it is, they're going to have him on a bargain. And if someone's going to want to take him from the Celtics, I think they're going to see a lot of that value in the playoffs here. So, all right, I want to move on to one last section here. I told you I wouldn't keep you too long today, Drew, so I want to get you out of here with a few rapid-fire questions. This is kind of like the cousin of our Green with Envy Fast Break that we put you on here. So I'm just going to run through about five different questions here, and let's just see what happens, okay?
Okay.
First question I got for you. Worst meal you had on the road this year? The worst.
Most of them are really good.
This is why I figured this might stick out more, because I know how you guys live on the road, and it's usually pretty nice. So if one's not good, I feel like that might actually stick out more than what's the best.
Oh, I was thinking about media food. Media food is generally pretty good. Sometimes they give you a concession voucher, which is kind of a pain in the ass. You got to go up to the concourse. That's what happened in D.C., and I went up with Scal, and he got mobbed. It was amazing. It was like it was like zombies were attacking him, because it was right when the gates opened. But I will go with Oklahoma City. which is probably not surprising. I would say, and I'm not throwing stones, but I would say in terms of NBA cities, that has the least going on downtown Oklahoma City. So, and that's not an insult. That's just a fact. And Oklahoma City,
I can verify this to be.
Yeah. So, OKC dinner was underwhelming. We'll say that.
I was myself and actually Greg, we were there for after game five. Was it game five? No, game four. OKC, Golden State, the last year of Kevin Durant. So this is actually the last win Kevin Durant ever had in Oklahoma City. It was a Sunday night. Myself, wow. Greg, and two other friends drove up from Austin because I had my manager at the time used to work for the Thunder. So he hooked us up with some tickets for some connections he had. And we were like, man, this city is going to be electric tonight. We were like, you know, hanging out in the concourse. We grabbed a couple souvenirs. Our hotel was like right downtown. We're like, let's just throw this in the room. Let's go see like what the city's like. I'm sure it's just like they're like, holy crap. We're one game away from beating the 73 win Warriors. Crickets. Just crickets, man. It was it wasn't Boston. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah. So,
all right. Let's go on to the next one here. We can stop throwing shade at Oklahoma City out here, just catching strays. What's the best hotel on the road?
Now, there are some really good ones. The best one to me is one to me is Philly. And it's literally tip top because you go up the way you check into this hotel, bro. You got to go to the Sky Lobby, which is the 60th floor of a beautiful building in downtown Philly. You go to the Sky Lobby, you check in, whatever. Then you go to a different bank of elevators to get to your actual floor where your room is, and it's brand new. It's just gorgeous. To give you an idea of how nice this hotel is, I can't remember which, because our two Philly trips, actually we had three of them, one preseason and then two in early and mid-November. So we banged them out, and November 15th was our last game there. I think it was the last one. I'm at the front desk, and I look to my right, and there's Mike Tirico. And Mike and I have known each other for a few years just because of the Syracuse connection. And he's an awesome, awesome guy. And I was like, holy shit. Mike Tirico, what's up, man? And then we talked for a little bit. We got breakfast the next day up in the like gorgeous lounge. I mean, that it, like if you think about opulence, like if the Great Gatsby were set in 2024, they'd probably have a party at that hotel in Philly. And it's great, Will, because Philly, not my favorite city. Would not have that in my top five, but the hotel, that's number one.
This is why I changed the question that way. All right, next one. Most impressive player, non-Celtic, that you saw live. I know you didn't call every single road game because some of them are on national TV. So who's the most impressive player that you saw live?
Two jump to my mind right away. One of them is SGA. SGA was giving us that smoke for three quarters, and then Jason Tatum raised his hand and said, I'll take him, and he kind of shut him down. Now, we still lost that game, but SGA was amazing. And, you know, I actually had a friend text me during the day before that game, what do you think about the Celtics tonight? And I'm like, I feel pretty good about it. You know, SGA is obviously their best player, MVP candidate. And we have the best defensive backcourt in the league. I think we should be okay, right? Like, he'll probably get his to an extent. But, dude, Holiday and White, they had no answers for him. You got to put length on him. Scal calls it, you got to gap him, like give him a little extra space. Because once he feels your body, then he can kind of slither past it. So SGA was amazing. My definite answer though is, and people are going to hate this, but it's Anthony Edwards. And I remember getting some tweets like, we get it, dude. You grew up in Minnesota. Like, stop, you know, stroking Anthony Edwards. I'm like, did y'all not watch that shit? Wouldn't you rather lose to a really good player than a bum? Anthony Edwards single-handedly outscored the Celtics in that overtime when we were at Minnesota in early November. It's an amazing performance, and you're seeing it now. Like, he's that guy. And it's not, we're not talking about the future. We're talking about right now. He's a stone-cold killer. And the thing for Minnesota is he hasn't even played that great, at least not in game two. And they're still up two games to none. Like, they're scary. And he's a treat to watch. And he's got a great personality. Like, he is a face of the league type player.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. I'm big on the Anthony Edwards train here. That's definitely a guy that's going to be a lot of fun to watch. Last question I got for you here, man. If you could share with us, it's Mike Gorman's last season. I know that you guys have done the meetups on camera that you guys have filmed. People have been able to watch a little bit, get some insight into your relationship and the, let's call it the transfer of power. Any anecdotes or advice from Mike that really stick out to you that you're going to hold with you here going forward?
Yeah. So I've gotten the chance to spend a decent amount of time with Mike, and you're right. Well, like we did film that stuff and people see that and it's great. But the stuff that I cherish is, you know, away from the camera. And also just how nice his wife, Terry, has been to me as well. So the Gormans, the two of them, they've made me feel at home like right away. And we talked about the pressure I feel and, you know, knowing how big the shoes I'm stepping into are. But I really value the relationship we've been able to build. And Mike has even said to me like, hey, I'm kind of glad that, you know, we hired someone I didn't know before, because that gives us a chance to develop this real relationship, you know, from scratch. Right. So that's been cool. The other night, the last regular season game I went to, I actually wasn't at Mike Gorman Day, which I was kind of bummed about. I was doing something for ESPN in San Antonio. But looking back on it, I think it might have been a good thing that I wasn't there. I didn't want it to be a distraction at all. Like, it was kind of, I think it was good for me to like watch it from afar. But the Friday before when we played, I think it was Charlotte, and you know, I went up to Mike after the game and like we walked out together and it was really neat. I was actually walking right behind him and, you know, a bunch of fans were coming up to him and he's gracious as always. And that's another lesson I've learned from him is how to handle that. Not like anyone's ever going to give a shit about me like they do about Mike Gorman, but even still, like when it does happen, I've learned about how to deal with that for Mike. And I was walking behind him and I was like, I'm literally walking in his footsteps right now. that's kind of how I hope to handle the job, because he is so classy, man. Everything he does is gracious and classy. And I was thinking about how he calls a game and the rhythm to it and the way he's like takes it, makes it. We all know, but there's a call from earlier this year where he says, takes his time, knocks it down. It's like almost poetry. Yeah. And I don't know if he even thinks about it beforehand or if it just comes naturally to him, but stuff like that, I feel like I've learned a lot by watching and listening to him. And I just feel extremely grateful that we've been able to become friends over the last 6 months here.
Yeah, it's, you know, Mike Gorman, like you said, Mike Gorman's always going to hold a special place. We were lucky enough to have him on our show earlier this season. And, you know, with Greg and I's ties to being from Dorchester, going to the same high school Mike Gorman, that was absolutely a special moment. And it's funny, that actually came from, you talked about like his graciousness. That moment actually came from, I was in Boston for the Celtics Nets in-season tournament game. And I was actually with three other guys from Dorchester after the game. And we were waiting for just like kind of Uber prices to go down. So we grabbed a drink at what happened to be the spot Mike goes to after yeah. basically every game. And we were sitting there and one guy was like, I'm pretty sure that's Mike Gorman. I was like, oh shit, that is Mike Gorman. This is four kids from Dorchester who know this story. Yeah. And three of us went to Boston Labs, so we know the story of Mike Gorman very intimately. And so it's kind of, to your point, biding our time. Like, all right, we got to say something. But like, yeah. you know, he's sitting there with his wife and, you know, eventually we do say something and they couldn't have been nicer. And it's funny. His wife, Terry, was awesome. But I've heard Mike tell this story a couple times about how his wife, who I believe is from Pittsburgh, she said, I never really got like the whole like being from Boston, being so much different than being from anywhere else until the duck boat parade. And she's like, these kids were banging on the duck boat, yelling for Mike, like, we're from Dorchester. Yeah. And she told us that story. And I've then heard Mike now tell that story about four different times during his interviews. Yeah. And so it was really cool to be like, yeah, that's 100% accurate. They met four guys at a bar after a game. Yeah. And that's exactly what they told. But it was a cool experience. And yeah, you taking over from Mike here now at the official Mike Gorman announcers table. Really excited for what's coming next here with you and Scal. The future is very bright for the Celtics on the court and behind the announcers table. Before you go, Drew, I do have to make sure that I get you to clarify one thing. So earlier this year, when you came down to San Antonio on New Year's Eve, it was Greg and I were in the building as well. We texted you. We were able to meet up, come chat with you a bit during halftime. So one thing I just need you to clarify here is that in this photo, like, people don't believe me, but you're 6'8", Greg's 6'5", and I'm 6'1". I just want to make sure that we clarify that is the definitive height for everybody in this photo. So just go on record for me. I just want to make sure that you can let the people know the truth about that photo.
I am not only 6'8", I was actually standing on a step and you guys were one level below. So it's an optical illusion. And after the game, this was nice of you, Will. People don't know this, but Will actually let me drive his Ferrari to where I was going that night. So not only is Will 6'1", but he's generous and also happens to own a very nice fleet of cars. So I just want to say thank you for that again.
Wait, when you come down to Central Texas, we got you. That's the bottom line. Yeah. You come down here, we know how to treat you right. Southern hospitality. It's apparently worn off on us. It's become a staple of it. But Drew, I appreciate you being here, man. This is always a blast having you on the show here. Really excited for this Celtics run coming up. I know that we will stay connected and hopefully, maybe like you said, you know, could only be a couple months away, a couple weeks away here, where maybe we'll meet you in Boston. See you on one of those duck boats sitting right next to Mike Gorman. But appreciate you being here, man, and doing this today.
Yes, sir. Thanks, Will. Appreciate you, brother.
All right, guys. We're going to play you out of here with some music from Greg's band down here in Austin, Texas. They are Black Sheep Optimists. We will catch you guys later.
Yo, I flipped it like Simone Biles.
Miles from a throne, see me smile cause I found peace.
While I'm at home,
I rhyme a little bit different, got that sound of my own.
And with the time limit I'm shifting, man, I'm proud that I've grown. It's that right time
to rise to the occasion, put the pen up on the paper
and flip the occupation. I'm getting motivated,
it's goals to be created.
I'm making this a moment, there's no time for waiting. See the city from a bird's third eye word.
I learn to observe what the many won't find. Don't mind me,
flying to the moon, doing fine. See,
sliding on the ground,
I'll take another cup of rhymes, please God.
I lost a dollar and a dime piece. They found me on the floor while I was trying to find me.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.